Dr. Shoup's one of our new orthopedics. He's been here a year, but he was also in the military. He's one of our, was in our Navy, and I really appreciate his service. My brother was in the Air Force, so any of you guys that have family in the military, I know you all appreciate their service. And Dr. Shoup's going to talk to us about fractures from injury to return. Just so a little personal note, he is married, has three kids, and one rabbit. He has not outnumbered the rabbit, and he and his son make up the males in the house. So without further ado, Dr. Shoup.
Perfect. Thank you. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me. I have no disclosures today, so we're going to talk really briefly about fractures. Fractures come in all sorts of varieties, and so this topic is going to kind of skirt the surface of some of the common things that you potentially will see this year or have already seen, and we won't go into great depth. But want to start out with just two cases just to kind of set the time work for this. So it's August, it's your first week back playing football. You have one of your seniors, he's a wide receiver. He dives for a ball doing a drill and comes up with a shoulder injury. He's unable to continue because it hurts pretty significantly. You can see a little deformity up on the top of the shoulder. And so you sling him, you send him to the ER, and you call your team physician. So the x-ray comes back, and this is what you have. So you have a mid-shaft clavicle fracture. Again, it's the first week in August. What are you going to do with one of your starting wide receivers? Case number two, so it's the same week. It's a busy first week of August. This is a 14-year-old athlete, so he's not on your varsity football team, but he's playing on the freshman team. He's a lineman during a drill. He goes down with a forearm injury. It's obviously deformed. He's unable to continue. You splint him, you send him to the ER, and you call your team physician. You've probably seen this injury before. It happens quite regularly. So you get your x-rays. These are what you have, and so what do you do with this? So the questions are what are we going to do now? So acute fractures make up just over 10% of all injuries that are seen in high school athletics. This data was taken from 9 sports, the most common sports in high school. The highest rate of fractures comes in football, so a collision sport. Lowest rate comes from volleyball. Boys more commonly sustain fractures than girls do. Most frequent sites are the hand and finger, the wrist and forearm, and then the lower leg. The percentages are up there. So time loss. So why do fractures matter? So for the majority of these injuries, over 3 weeks is lost. That's over a third of the fractures that you see. Your athletes are going to be out for more than 3 weeks. If you look across the board at all other injuries, soft tissue, ligamentous injuries, there are more time lost for fractures than any other type of injury. Operative treatment, 16.1% of these fractures, and about a quarter of all the injuries sustained that your athletes undergo surgery for, a quarter of those are for fractures. So interestingly, illegal activity accounts for about 10% of the fractures, and the highest rate of illegal activity comes from girls' soccer. So I've broken this down to kind of the most common, and I'm really just going to skirt the surface of these. So common fractures to the hands and fingers, and then we'll talk about the foot and ankle as well, and the forearm. So common fractures, and I know you've already heard some upper extremity lectures, so I won't go into too much detail, but mallet finger is very common. That can be ligamentous or bony. Phalanx fractures or fingers, and then metacarpal fractures. So the mallet finger, which you've heard about already, your athlete will present with pain, swelling, and really an inability to extend the tip of the finger. They'll present with an extensor lag, so that just inability, the finger's kind of drooping like it is up here. And it can involve a bone, but more often it can be ligamentous. So the ring finger's the most common, followed by the other fingers that you have up there. So recommended treatment, you're going to see this is the common theme for this. We're orthopedists, we love x-rays. You come in for something, we get an x-ray. So we're going to want to get an x-ray mainly to look at the congruency of the joint. Most of these can be treated non-operatively, even if there's bone involvement. So we split these in extension full-time for 6 weeks, And then after 6 weeks, as long as they have less than a 10-degree extensor lag, we'll just splint them for six additional weeks, but only at night or when you're playing sports. Multiple different type of splints, but these splints are pretty functional, and your athletes can actually play in them. So patient compliance is the number one goal for this. If they're not going to keep the splint on, they will have that lag. If you look across the board, when we do our physicals for college and our pro athletes, a lot of the football players will have these fingers that they can't fully extend because they weren't compliant with their brace use. So really expected return to play, it's base sport dependent. Most of your athletes can continue to play with this unless they're a baseball pitcher or somebody who needs control with their finger gripping a ball. Unrestricted without a splint is typically 12 weeks. So Phalanx fractures commonly present the same way, pain, swelling, and deformity, various mechanisms. A lot of times it's associated with a finger fracture dislocation. Beware of malrotation. Malrotation looks like this: when your athlete will go to make a fist, the fingers overlap instead of pointing all fingernails in the same direction. So again, get an x-ray. These fractures can come in all shapes and sizes, from the non-displaced to the displaced. A lot of our athletes are skeletally immature. This is a fracture through the growth plate called an extraoctave fracture. These tend to heal pretty well. And then they can involve the condyles or the joint. So on the field, if you can just buddy tape the finger together and get imaging at a later time. So really the definitive treatment, many times we treat them non-operatively in a cast or a splint. Sometimes we treat them open, and it all depends on really what the injury entails. These are examples of open treatment. Typically we do open treatment if the fracture is unstable, if it's a oblique type fracture or involves the joint. Expected to return to play. Again, this is a common theme. Many, if you put them in a splint, you wrap that, and as long as the referees and the rules are okay with it, they can return to sport. If it's your more dexterity sports, your racket sports, your small ball sports, then they might not be able to return. So unrestricted is about 6 to 12 weeks, depending again on that. If you treat them non-operatively, they're going to get back much quicker than if we treat them operatively. So metacarpal fracture, so we're moving sort of up the hand, and as we move to the longer bones, they become less tolerant for continued play. So these present again with pain, swelling, bruising. Very common after falling onto a closed fist. I don't know how many of you have fallen onto a closed fist, but apparently it's common. Hit by a pitch, I've seen a couple of these, and then torsional injuries, just hanging on too long to a stick when they shouldn't have. So the boxer's fracture or the closed fist injury tends to be here at the metacarpal neck and head. These we tend to treat in splints. Once they get more mid-shaft, it really depends on how many they are. It depends on how rotated they are, whether we can treat them closed or whether we need to fix those. Once you involve more than three, these will tend to be operated on. So get the x-ray. The splint for the boxer's fracture tends to be an ulnar gutter splint, can be converted to a cast later. We've also got what's called the exos splint, or a more hard type brace that can be removable. My thought with a lot of these kids though are they're kids. If they have a brace, they're not going to wear it, so we tend to cast them. So expected return to play, again, sport dependent. Metacarpal fractures, they can play even at a high level in some sort of immobilization. Unrestricted activities without a splint for these long bones, it can be up to 12 weeks for them to return to unrestricted activity. So continuing to move up the arm, we'll talk about the wrist and forearm. Here we're going to talk about scaphoid fractures, which also can be other carpal bones, distal radius fractures, and then both bone forearm fracture. I won't go into detail about that. Our second case that we're going to readdress at the end of the talk, we'll go over the both bone. So scaphoid fractures, you want to worry about these, and the typical mechanism is a fall on the outstretched hand. Typically, they present with pain on the thumb side of the hand over here, and you've got that tenderness within the snuff box. It also can be tenderness on the volar side of the wrist here. And so these require a high index of suspicion. Many times you'll get an x-ray like this one, you can actually see the fracture. But at other times, you'll have an x-ray like here on the left up here. You can't actually see a fracture at all. It's not till you get an MRI that it's further clarified. But on many of these fractures, we're not just jumping out and getting MRIs on everybody. So what do? In this situation? You get an x-ray and then you splint them. A week or two later, we'll re-examine them, and if they're still tender, we can repeat the x-ray, and many times we can see the fracture at that point. So definitive treatment, it can be non-operative, it can also be operative treatment. The ones that we tend to fix tend to have displacement greater than a millimeter. They involve a more proximal pull as opposed to a distal pull, and that has to do with blood supply. This is one that if we do treat in a cast, it's the thumb spike a cast. So we want to immobilize the joint above and the joint below. So your patients or athletes tend to hate this cast because they don't even get to use their thumb. Most short arm cast you can. There's controversy whether we treat them in a long arm cast or a short arm cast, but the duration of this tends to be longer than other treatment. We can cast our patients for up to 12 weeks. When we explain this to the athlete, to their parents, sometimes that drives us to do an operative procedure just because they can't tolerate being in a cast for that long, typically fixed with a single screw. And why do we care about this? This x-ray up here is a fracture that's been missed. So we have an athlete that we see, he's got some wrist pain. We get an x-ray, it looks normal, we kind of forget about him. He says he gets better, things go on, and he comes in years later saying, my wrist is starting to bother me again. You get an x-ray, and you see a fracture that's been there for quite some time. He now has arthritis within the distal radius here, and it becomes more of a problem as opposed to if we had just re-x-rayed him 2 to 3 weeks later, we could have prevented this even with casting. So fracture healing for return to play, it's going to tend to be 6+ weeks. So these fractures can put you down for a while. So the distal radius fracture, a mechanism of injury here is fall onto an outstretched hand. Pain, swelling, and deformity, most often they cannot continue to play. These are ones that we see more in our younger athletes. This is what we call a torus or buckle fracture. These ones do very well in a cast for about 3 weeks. You put them in a removable brace, and by the 4 to 5 week point, you can get them back to playing. The ones that don't do as well that quickly are these that involve further displacement, so actual fractures that require reduction. For the most part, these fractures can be reduced under sedation, put in a cast and actually treated non-operatively. Very rarely do we operate on those ones. So short versus long arm casts will depend on if the ulna is involved. We have had patients where they break both arms, which are awful. We do like to treat them in a short arm cast if we can. If we take away the elbow, that just involves more stiffness and really more irritation from the parents as they have to take care of that. But we will treat them appropriately. So tend to be 4 to 6 weeks in a cast and put them into a splint after that, and then we're able to get them back out there. Once we convert them to these removable braces, they're much more tolerable to, one, getting wet, but two, getting back out there with their activity. So on to the lower leg, I'll just talk about really ankle injuries here, including the Maisonneuve fracture. So these are common across all sports. Typically involve a twisting or a rolling of the ankle. It can be as simple as stepping off of a curb wrong. It can be as significant as sliding into that base or something more traumatic. Tend to present with immediate swelling, immediate pain. They might not be able to bear weight on it. When you actually examine them, either on the field or on the sideline, they're going to be point tender over the bone. Talk about it in the Maisonneuve fracture, but anytime you have an ankle injury that's really swollen, you also want to examine the knee to make sure you don't miss injuries. So common theme here, get an x-ray. It can involve both the tibia and the fibula. The treatment is really going to depend on where this fracture is. A fracture that's down here below the joint line can really be treated like an ankle sprain. We can treat it in a cam boot. We can treat it in an air cast. And these athletes tend to come back much quicker, maybe by the 6 week point. Once it comes above the level of the joint here is when we think about either immobilization in a cast or treating them operatively. If it involves both the distal fibula and the distal tibia, then those are considered unstable, like this one, and we tend to want to fix those. We love hardware. So as far as rehab goes, for injuries like this, eventually they will be transitioned to a cam boot. It's going to be 6+ weeks of this rehabilitation. When we treat these operatively, it's going to be closer to 4 to 5 months that they're ready to go 100% on their running, cutting, and agility sports. So when do we return them to play? After they really have no pain, they're healed on x-ray, and again, it's going to be 12+ weeks. So I'll end with this fracture, the Meissonnieu fracture. So you have an athlete that twists their ankle. You get an x-ray, as we do on all these. And when you look at this, the x-ray looks really good. There's a little bit of swelling over the lateral malleolus here. The medial malleolus looks okay. On the lateral, everything looks like you're in alignment. Maybe it's just an ankle sprain. But we always want to check the knee. This is a patient that I've seen recently. She's got pain at the knee. So when you come up to the knee, she's got a fracture of this proximal fibula here. So this involves the ligament or the syndesmosis that goes complete clear from the ankle all the way up, and the energy comes out up here. So just because an ankle x-ray is normal, if your patient's complaining of discomfort, you can't forget the knee. This is operated on about 99% of the time. Can involve putting two screws across. The benefit of putting screws across or any fixation across is you get the length of the fibula out correct, you get the rotation correct, and that allows the soft tissue or the syndesmosis to heal. This is sort of like a high ankle sprain. There's pluses and minuses of screw fixation. The pluses are everything is anatomically reduced. The minuses are if you don't take them out, they will break, which in and of itself, the studies show, isn't bad, but most people don't want to have broken hardware in their ankle. So similar to an ankle fracture, you got to make sure this thing heals. If we're going to take the screws out, we typically take them out at 8 to 12 weeks after. It's a relatively quick procedure, but it's going to be 12+ weeks to get this athlete out. So these are the guys that are going to be standing on your sidelines or in the dugout or on the court with crutches and in a brace. I did put stress fractures in here, and so why do we care about stress fractures? Stress fractures can actually become a significant problem. I'm not sure if you guys remember, this is the Louisville Duke game in 2013. Stress fractures, if they're not taken care of,
Patino's out with the hand and root.
They're shaken up because of how gruesome it looks.
They are just visibly as a team.
And the sound doesn't matter.
Completely shaken.
Wow. You're going to be looking over.
You saw it on the backside
right
there, folks. His leg came under him as he landed, and if you can bear to watch it, take a look, but it's a terrible looking injury.
Look at the bench.
So this is Kevin Ware. And so did you catch that injury? I didn't zoom it in, but he broke his tibia. He had an open fracture to his tibia, and presumably he had been dealing with stress fractures up to that point. So we care because a stress fracture can become a pathological fracture. So stress fractures, in another study here, this is out of AOSSM, it's less than 1% of over 50,000 injuries were stress fractures, so maybe that doesn't matter so much, but if you have an athlete that sustains an open fracture, that's a pretty big problem. These are most common in our endurance athletes, so cross country, gymnastics, occasionally in basketball. As opposed to the acute fractures, these are more common in girls than they are in boys. Most frequent sites are the lower leg, the foot, and the lower spine as well. These can come from many different mechanisms, overtraining and repetitive use. It can also come from just a rapid increase in the amount or intensity of activity, unfamiliar surfaces, so going from a turf field to a grass field, clay courts, hard surface courts, improper equipment, so shoes, cleats, and then just increase of physical stress. There's something that we talk about, the female triad, eating disorders, amenorrhea, and osteoporosis. Anytime I see a girl in clinic who is having shin splints, I always ask about their menstrual cycle. They think that's odd coming from an orthopedic surgeon, but it matters, because athletes that aren't not having them when they should be are either overtraining or not eating correctly. So with this, you really have to have a high index of suspicion. We do get x-rays on these. This is a cross-country athlete that had just been running through pain and discomfort for probably 2 to 3 months when she came to see me. X-rays show she's got this pretty big stress reaction. When we get an MRI of it, it's actually a complete break to the cortex. It's not entirely a cross. She didn't need surgery for it, but unfortunately it took her out of her sport the entire track season this year. The treatment for this is rest, and more rest. If it hurts to walk on, you've got to put them on crutches or immobilize them somehow. If you have a femoral neck stress fracture, such as depicted here, these don't necessitate an operation immediately, but they've got to be on crutches for the entire 6 weeks, and we don't want them walking until they're pain-free. This can become a fracture that comes all the way across, and that's a problem if it happens. So goal here is prevention. We want to have cross-training. You want to have incremental goals. We don't want our athletes going from 1 mile to 10 miles in a week, but we want to teach them about a proper diet and just taking care of themselves. So early recognition in these equals early return to play. If we can catch it at the onset, it might not develop into a complete fracture. So expected return to play, if you catch them early, you can get them back as early as 6 weeks. The ones in the feet tend to last forever, but we can get them back. So I just want to come back to these cases. So just to remind you, our first kid's a 17-year-old. It's a senior season. He really wants to play football. He has some colleges looking at him. He has that mid-shaft clavicle fracture that first week of football practice. We treated him in a sling for about 3 weeks. You really have to kind of put reins around these kids and hold them back from doing too much. Well, we initiated motion within those first 3 weeks. At 3 weeks, we repeated his x-rays and advanced his motion because he was having no more discomfort. I typically begin strengthening once he's got full motion, which includes raising all the way up, all the way in abduction. And then we repeat the x-rays. So they tend to heal really well. He's got significant callus formation here. You're never going to see on an x-ray complete union before you clear these kids to play. If you wait for a complete union, you're going to lose them for an entire year. At 6 weeks, his fracture is not yet healed radiographically. Clinically, it is. So at 5 weeks post-injury, he had full strength, he had full motion. We started him on position-specific drills, and at 6 weeks, we cleared him to begin full contact and return to play. So his very first drive, this isn't him, but similar to what he did, he dove to catch a ball in the end zone, and he came up fine. So turned out well. Case number two, this is our kid with the both bone forearm fracture, so he's a freshman. He had an obvious deformity when we saw him. When it's mid-shaft and involves both bones, there's much of a less likelihood that this is going to heal in a correct position on its own. And so we call this a fracture of necessity. It necessitates surgery so that we can restore really the anatomy of the forearm so he can maintain supination, pronation, and function of the arm. So he was injured on a Friday. On Saturday morning, we actually got him in and fixed him with open plates. He rehabbed. He was in a splint for 2 weeks. We converted him to one of the removable braces and really started strengthening him once he was pain-free at 6 weeks. But because of the lever arm here, we don't return them to sport as quickly as you think we would, even when they're healed. It's going to be 3, 4, 5 months later. I don't let these kids do handstands, cartwheels, dive where they're going to put all their weight on their wrist for 6 months. And then you have to deal with the fact that he was a freshman, really first or second year playing football, sports psychology, whether or not he's going to want to keep playing football. And so in conclusion, don't panic. All the fractures, we treat them relatively relatively similar, although they're not all the same. They do get better. These kids are great, great kids to work with. Kids make you look good because almost all of them get better. Generally, they take 4 to 6 weeks to heal, and I disinvolve your team physician early. Thank you.